You know, last Sunday our lectionary yielded a great bit of truth that an outsider came in and preached to us. And this Sunday, it does the same, except I'm not an outsider this Sunday. Our first reading is Isaiah 58, beginning the second half of the ninth verse. You shall cry for help, and the Lord will say, "Here I am." If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, if you offer your food to the hungry and satisfy the needs of the afflicted, then your light shall rise in the darkness, and your gloom be like the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your needs in parched places, and make your bones strong, and you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water whose waters never fail. Your ancient ruins shall be rebuilt. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations. You shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of streets to live in. If you refrain from trampling the Sabbath, from pursuing your own interests on my holy day, if you call the Sabbath a delight and the holy day of the Lord honorable, if you honor it, not going your own ways, serving your own interests, or pursuing your own affairs, then you shall take delight in the Lord, and I will make you ride upon the heights of the earth. I will feed you with the heritage of your ancestor Jacob, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. I'm going to begin my sermon with just that one reading, and then we'll go on to the gospel in just a moment. If you remove the yoke from among you, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, your light shall rise in the darkness and your gloom be like the noonday. If you remove the yoke of the pointing of the finger and speaking of evil. When we think about yoke and burden, we usually think about what has happened to us, what other people put upon us. But this reading from Isaiah says that God sees as our yoke and our burden quite often what we do to other people. That is the burden that God asks us to drop in Isaiah. What we do to other people, the pointing of the finger, the speaking of evil, the pushing away. And I can't think of a place where that is more prevalent than in our churches. We do that, don't we? We do that. We don't want to do that. We don't mean to do that. But often what begins as a glorious gift from God can turn into something we jealously guard, when in fact that gift from God is the first thing we're supposed to give away. I remember when I was a little kid living across from Wilson Farms down here, or what the family knows as 9168. When we lived at 9168, years and years ago, right across the fence in the first mobile home was Lori Ryder's grandmother, Mrs. Darling. And she had a rose garden, and it was gorgeous. She had all these beautiful, beautiful roses in rows and rows, and this woman had an incredible green thumb, gorgeous flowers. And I would go out in my side yard with my dog, and I'd hit baseballs. And inevitably, some of my baseballs would cross over that fence, sometimes landing in her rose garden. And I remember the first few times that that happened, going right up to the fence in horror, because I didn't know the woman well, and seeing my baseball over there amid all that beauty, and being scared to climb the fence and go get it. And I remember sneaking over a few times real quickly, like, grab the ball and run. And then one time I was hitting baseballs and I noticed that she was in her storm door. She was standing inside her foyer of her mobile home looking out the storm door watching me. And sure enough, I hit a baseball. Boom! Right into her roses. I didn't know what to do. So I just kind of put down my bat and looked at my dog Dog wasn't smart enough to fetch it for me. And I walk over to the fence. It's like here. And I'm just looking in the garden. And I take a deep breath and I look up. She's an old lady. Old people are crotchety, I used to think, before I was well on my way to becoming one. And she opens the door and comes out and she says, "You're Corey." Uh-oh, she knows my name. And I said, "Yes." And she said, "My husband and I have been watching you play ball. And we love to watch you play ball. And it's okay for you to come over the fence and get your ball when it lands in our yard." Is this some kind of trap? You know, being a kid that read comic books, I knew what this meant was I'd walk into the garden and this trap door would open and, "Ah!" And my parents would never hear from me again. So I cross over the fence and very gingerly walk in and I've knocked off a blossom, sure enough, and I grab my baseball and say, "Thank you!" and run away. And the next time it happened, I'm standing at the fence and I see the ball. And I couldn't bring myself to cross over. So I called, "Mrs. Darling, Mrs. Darling," until that poor woman got up out of her chair and came to the door. "Can I come in your yard and get my baseball?" "Yes, Corey. Anytime you hit a ball into our yard, you may come and get it." I asked permission probably the next 10 times I hit that ball until finally one day she met me at the fence with the ball and said, "Really, Corey, any time you hit a ball over here, it's fine. Come on over and get it. We don't care. Everything is fine." It took me that long to realize that this woman meant what she said. The beauty she had created was for everyone to enjoy. And she enjoyed looking over that beauty and watching a little boy hitting a ball and playing with his dog. See, central to Mrs. Darling's heart, and you can see this in her granddaughter, Lori, by the way, central to Mrs. Darling's heart was this celebration of life. She loved to see the kids. She loved to see the green and the red of the blossoms, and she loved to see life springing up wherever it was springing up. And far from fencing it in to keep everyone away from it, she wanted people to enjoy it and enjoy life. She wanted her joy in life to be infectious. Now, when Isaiah quotes God as saying, "Look, put down the yoke of pointing the finger and speaking evil at each other's," it's the same mindset. Mrs. Darling had this godly mindset. God creates this beautiful garden, this beautiful world where the earth turns in such a way that the sun that's at a perfect distance comes up and makes the sky kind of orange and pink first, and then goes up and over, and then down on the other side the sky gets orange and pink, and then the stars are there, and the moon, and it's beautiful, and the grass is green, and the trees are big, and there's nice shade, and there's lemonade. God makes this world, and then sees so many of us standing on the other side of the fence, afraid to come in. How many times does God have to tell us, "You are welcome to come over"? And once we do come over, it is not our job then to stand at the fence and keep everybody else out. No, it's our job. It's our job to let everyone know that we're all welcome in the garden. That's what Isaiah said. Now we go on to our gospel. So we have about 700 years after this prophet writes these words. And then the great keepers of these words, those who are in temple and synagogue, the churchgoers and the church leaders, treat Jesus like this. 13th chapter of Luke, beginning at the 10th verse. Now Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and just then there appeared a woman with a spirit that had crippled her for 18 years. She was bent over and was quite unable to stand up straight. When Jesus saw her, he called her over and said, "Woman, you are set free from your ailment." When he laid his hands on her, immediately she stood up straight and began praising God. But the leader of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had cured on the Sabbath, kept saying to the crowd, "There are 6 days on which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be cured, and not on the Sabbath day." But the Lord answered him and said, "You hypocrites, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to give it water? And ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 long years, be set free from this bondage on the Sabbath day?" When he said this, all his opponents were put to shame, and the entire crowd was rejoicing at all the wonderful things that he was doing. What Jesus did was knock down the fence. The Sabbath is a marvelous idea. It is a beautiful idea. And the world would be such a better place if all of us took one day out of seven to just reflect on how great God is. Most of our personal problems would fade away. Most of our conflicts with other individuals would shrink to their appropriate size. We would be a people that would go out in peace and come back in love if we obeyed the Sabbath, if we took 24 hours out of every week to be at peace, let our hearts be restored, and focus exclusively on God. Very few of us do this. Very few of us. It's hard. It's hard to do it. That being said, the Sabbath had become something different, where the rules and perceived slights to those rules became the ruling factor, as opposed to stopping to glory in all that God had done. It was an enforced stop so you could catch other people and see that they weren't as holy as you are. Jesus calls this out. He says, "Look, you've got someone here. You just untied your donkey at home and took it to the water so it wouldn't be thirsty. And then you come here and tell me I can't help a woman in extreme pain for 18 years? I can't untie her bondage?" Well, it's obvious how ridiculous the religious and their rules had become. So sad when that happens. What leads people who have everything to suddenly believe that they are threatened and they have nothing? What leads people who have been so deeply, profoundly blessed to suddenly turn jealous and selfish that some of it might slip away if they share it with others? It's a sad human impulse that exists. And I see it in our country as well. We live in the greatest country on earth, where we can easily function and meet our needs. The resources we have at our fingertips would be astounding to the richest Roman from Jesus' time. That which we call poor, in comparison to the rest of the world and the rest of history, is rich beyond measure. And yet somehow we fool ourselves into believing we're threatened by that which is different, threatened by the other. And we allow ourselves to make decisions out of fear. That is so unbecoming and unchristian of us. God has blessed us so deeply and profoundly. and has asked us to simply do the same. Now, two things I'm going to mention this morning along these lines, and it's not a political statement because they are both highly nuanced and highly complex issues, and there is no simple solution. And the biggest problem we have today are people on the left and the right screaming through our television sets that they have the answer, because they don't. What they have is an obligation to keep as many people watching as long as possible to sell more gold bond powder and Sleep Number beds. The real truth is, in this nation, everybody wants to get in because it's so wonderful. And that includes our southern border with Mexico. And the truth is that there need to be rules for how people get in and how they stay. Beyond that, the truth is we are not terribly threatened by a Mexican man picking our tomatoes without a visa. We are not terribly threatened by a Mexican woman scrubbing an office toilet without the proper papers. You and I are not threatened either by an Islamic center, including a mosque, two blocks from Ground Zero. I'm not saying how you should think about the issue, except for this. You should not think about these issues from a position of fear. And what our pundits on the left and the right are promoting is a bigger fence, limiting more people from being in the garden, limiting more people from relaxing and thinking through the issue intelligently. It seems to me that when people don't take a Sabbath break, they don't get away from their computer screens or their televisions or their talk radio long enough to breathe some fresh air and see some flowers and watch a sunset, they get wound up so tight in what they perceive as a threat to them or a slam against them. And it seems to me that often religious people become the most arrogant of all. Does it seem that way to any of you? And again, right and left, I'm talking both extremes, and there's this big group of us in the middle that are just baffled. Baffled by the hate and the desperation and the twisting of words and the gotcha politics that is just swarming up in this most blessed of nations, in this most beautiful of gardens. It's an inside yoke, is the name of the sermon today. And it is an inside yoke. We are carrying a burden that is nonsensical. We are carrying a burden of fear with the mightiest army on the planet at our disposal. We are carrying a burden of want when all our needs are met. We're carrying this burden of ugliness when there is such beauty all around us. And we are feeling threatened by things that should not threaten because some people tell us we should feel threatened. It's an inside yoke. And I, for one, refuse to wear it anymore. Now, on my blog this week, we were talking about that the Cordoba house near Ground Zero. And the first several respondents were definitely left of center. And then one respondent, who's definitely right of center, came up. And we ended up, in the first couple of exchanges, seeming kind of nasty. And then suddenly, it was like you were in the playground and everyone dropped the little toy shovels and decided, okay, let's play together. And what occurred was we didn't all agree, but we all respected. And we decided, okay, that person says things that someone else told me means they are evil. But I know that person better than I know someone else, and I know that person isn't evil, even though they're saying things I don't agree with. It's kind of called democracy. We live in Eden, my friends. We live in paradise compared to Jesus' day. Heck, compared to 100 years ago, we live in paradise. I think it's high time that we take a lesson from Mrs. Darling. Invite folks over the fence to enjoy the beauty of the garden. Talk to them. Listen to them. Put down the heavy yoke of the pointing finger and the speaking of evil. Take a Sabbath. Take a Sabbath day from the fear and the anger and see if you don't just see the beauty too. Amen.